I now call this remote hearing meeting of the House Energy and Climate Finance and Policy Division to order. Good morning, all. It's good to see you. Members, thank you for joining us at this remote hearing. The hearing is operated under Minnesota House Rule 10.01. This is an informational hearing. We will not be taking votes, no official actions. And thus I am not calling for a quorum. The primary issue on our agenda today is House File XXX. It's my House file. It has been posted for about a week. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it before our House counsel, Mr. Eliff, goes over it for you. As many of you already know, the current contractual relationship between Xcel and St. Paul District Energy is set to expire. Xcel and District Energy have been working to propose a process that will result in a smooth transition to a new contractual agreement. Since the agreement, the new one, envisions a specific role for the PUC, the agreement was put into the bill that is before you. And thanks to Mr. Eliff for capturing the agreement and actually putting it into words in a bill. The Senate has already had an informational hearing, and that was done before our last session ended. Before the session ended, Senator Osmick sent us the paperwork for a four-party agreement, but there wasn't enough time for that to happen, which now allows us the time to have an informational hearing. So with that, I would ask Mr. Eliff to go over the bill, and then we are going to hear from Ken Smith and Rick Evans and take questions. Mr. Eliff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, as the Chair said, this bill specifies the conditions under which the existing power purchase agreement between Xcel and St. Paul District Heating and Cooling System can be amended. And perhaps a little history is in order here. This project is a result of the state's biomass mandate, which was enacted in 1994. This was one of the compromised portions of the agreement allowing Xcel to store nuclear waste here in Minnesota. The legislature set a goal that Xcel generate 125 megawatts of electricity from biomass by 2002. That was later amended down to 110 megawatts. But three projects came out of that mandate. The Laurentian project on the Iron Range, the Benson Turkey Litter project, both of which were terminated in 2017 with the approval of the legislature and the Public Utilities Commission. And the project with district heating is the one that's remaining. And about 25 megawatts per year is sold to Xcel from this project. The bill specifies a number of conditions that must be approved, all of which must be approved by the PUC in order for this new power purchase agreement to occur. And the parties must file by the end of 2021 a proposal to extend to make a new agreement. Five conditions. The first one is that the project continue to utilize waste wood as the primary fuel. And in 2019, my understanding is that St. Paul District Heating and Cooling used about 225,000 tons of waste wood to provide to generate the electricity that it sold to Xcel. The second condition is that any waste wood that's coming from ash trees must follow the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's regulations that are designed to contain the spread of the emerald ash borer throughout the state. The third condition is that the price paid by Xcel for this energy be comparable to the price It pays for refuse-derived fuel from electricity that is from refuse-derived fuel that's generated in Minnesota. That's electricity that Xcel now purchases for that purpose here in Minnesota. And that price also must not increase the total cost to ratepayers. The fourth condition is that this new power purchase agreement must occur in tandem with what's called an electrification project, which means that district heating and cooling would be powered from renewable energy sources. And the bill requires that along with the proposal for a new PPA, that the proposal must also evaluate the economics of using 30%, 60%, and 100% renewable electricity to power district energy. And that project, that repowering, that electrification project is to be completed by the end of 2027. Finally, the last condition is that the new power purchase agreement provides net benefits to Xcel ratepayers or to the state as a whole. The bill also specifies that the commission must approve or reject both the PPA and the electrification project in tandem. There can be no electrification project without a new PPA and no new PPA without an electrification project. And commission is to approve both of those if they are found to be in the public interest. The bill also provides that the cost for the electrification project may be recovered automatically outside of a general rate case, and that a new PPA would be effective through the end of 2023 or later if an electrification project is not completed before the end of 2023. Madam Chair, that's my summary of the bill.
Thank you. We have testifiers now, and Mr. Smith, would you, who's the CEO of Evergreen Energy, would you like to go ahead and testify?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to share my comments with you today. My name is Ken Smith. I'm the president and CEO of District Energy St. Paul and of Evergreen Energy. As some of you know, and as the chair noted, we've been working on this challenge for several months, and we're excited to bring this agreement with Xcel forward to you today. It provides an important pathway for innovation for the future while providing a glide path for St. Paul Cogeneration to continue to be a regional resource to manage tree waste as EAB continues to spread. For context, I think it's important to note the history, briefly note it, of St. Paul Cogeneration and why this facility exists. A key reason this biomass fueled combined heat and power plant was developed at District Energy St. Paul was a response to the difficulty the region experienced with managing large volumes of tree waste during the Dutch elm disease. Spread of that disease in the 70s and 80s devastated the tree canopy and generated enormous amounts of tree waste that needed to be managed. In the metro, much of that wood waste was piled up in locations like the Pig's Eye Wood Yard, which is just about 4 miles from the state capital. And the operators of that site were interviewed during that time, and this is a quote from that report. They found themselves inundated in acres and acres of elm debris with more coming in faster than they could manage, unquote. Much of that tree waste ended up being open burned in fires that were reported to burn for months. St. Paul Cogeneration was purposely designed to use raw tree waste as its renewable fuel source, generate electricity, as you heard, for Xcel, but also generated heat for District Energy St. Paul, and today is the largest outlet for tree waste in this region. It became operational in 2003 and was developed with over $60 million in private capital investment in response to the biomass mandate. The plant uses approximately 260,000 tons of wood waste annually to generate 25 megawatts of renewable electricity to Xcel and 60 megawatts of thermal energy to District Energy. And that heats over 200 buildings, about 33 million square feet in the Central Business District, including the State Capitol Complex. Now, to give you an idea how much tree waste that is, 260,000 tons of tree waste If that was in the form of wood chips, it would fill approximately 11,800 semi-loads. And if you were to line that up along I-94, it would extend from the state capital to Alexandria. That's how much we deal with on an annual basis. Now, the DNR estimates there'll be approximately 1.7 million tons of tree waste generated from the spread of EAB in public and private lands in the metro area, in the 7-county metro area. That would fill 76,000 semis, and that would extend from the capital to New Orleans. The tree waste we manage comes from cities and counties and agencies, MnDOT, VA, National Guard, many private landowners and businesses. By state law, this is material that cannot be landfilled. Since 2013, we have used tree waste from 171 Minnesota communities and 22 counties. And while we work with many local units of government, we mostly serve businesses, hundreds of them, in fact, and most are small. In excess of 750 businesses use St. Paul Cogeneration to dispose of tree waste from public and private lands. Our ability, as you've heard, to provide that public service past 2022 is contingent upon entering a new power purchase agreement with Xcel, as is laid out in the bill. And we understand that county partners are interested in new solutions to manage tree waste and other waste streams, but at this time, there's not an effective alternative in place, and it's estimated to take several years to put a new alternative in place. In late 2019, the state completed a significant interagency evaluation of tree waste problems led by the Environmental Quality Board, and among the conclusion was that there was no viable alternative existed to handle the volume currently managed by St. Paul Cogeneration. Now, the system's not perfect, but it is in place, and it's working, and it's managing tree waste in this region, close to where it's generated. And continuing to operate this facility in the short term will allow critical time for state and local units of government and small businesses to plan for what is needed next. And that's the framework laid out in this bill that we think achieves that. We have agreed together with Xcel to work together to evaluate the potential to develop a first-of-its-kind project in Minnesota's capital city for large-scale electrification, and through this partnership to decarbonize heating and cooling and moving forward to a first carbon-free large-scale district energy system in the United States. This strategic and collaborative partnership is a one-of-a-kind opportunity to demonstrate large-scale, cutting-edge technologies that have not been implemented in this scale in North America. It also establishes a framework to enter into new PPA to extend the operation of St. Paul Cogeneration and provide certainty to the market at reduced costs, all the things that were laid out by Mr. Elaw, as other alternatives are put in place to manage those waste streams going forward. If St. Paul Cogeneration is not going to continue to operate after the current PPA ends, it would leave a very big void in the waste management system and would require new solutions to be implemented very, very quickly. So time is short. As I commented at the beginning, we're very excited about this opportunity to work together with Xcel to learn what is possible to transition district energy to the future, but also to manage tree waste in the region as is needed currently. Thank you for the opportunity to share my comments, and I look forward to your questions.
Right now, I don't see any questions, so let us hear from Mr. Evans, and then I think members will have questions. Mr. Evans?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Appreciate the opportunity to present before you today. I've got people texting me. I've got to turn that off, or I'm going to be distracted by it for the next 10 minutes. I'll be very, very brief. You know, as I think members of the committee that have been around for several years understand that Xcel Energy has been trying to get out of the biomass business while at the same time preserving the asset that is district energy and what it provides for the city of St. Paul, including the Capitol complex and other areas. So this is our goal working forward here. The two principal elements of the bill that we particularly appreciate is the lowering of the price in the new PPA that will be negotiated under this bill. This could result in as much as a 50% reduction, perhaps even more, in the price that we pay for the energy from district energy. And that will be a significant savings for our customers. Again, this is excuse me, this is purchased power. So it's just a pass through to our customers in terms of how much we pay for this power. And we could reduce that by as much as half and perhaps even a little more, depending on the terms of the power purchase agreement that we sign. The second thing that it does is it sets up a very clear path for the eventual, and I should say hopeful, electrification of the system, so that the businesses and the Capitol complex in St. Paul that receive energy through district energy could, over the next several years, be receiving up to 100% carbon-free energy for their heating and cooling in the city. And that would be, as Ken mentioned, a significant leader in this area. The other thing I'll say about the bill is that it provides a tremendous amount of flexibility. As you'll see in there, the power purchase agreement would be extended through 2023, but perhaps for longer. And the conversion to electrification could be 30%, 60%, or 100%, as Mr. Eliff mentioned. And that's because we don't really know until we sit down and start doing the studying and the engineering exactly how much and how quickly any of this can happen. But this certainly sets us on the pace to do so. And under the terms of the bill, by December 31st of 2021, the two companies would come in jointly with a proposal for how this could go forward. And we see that as a tremendous opportunity for the two companies to work on this, while acknowledging that there's a lot of unknowns about how this transition might take place. And that's all to be worked out over the course of the next year and a half between the two companies as we get busy on this project. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions and appreciate again Representative Lugenius for bringing the bill forward and the opportunity to answer questions here today.
Representative Swazinski has a question.
Yes, thank you, Chair Wagenius. Just a general question, kind of as the early history of this. So obviously this plant didn't technically exist as a biomass burning plant prior to 2003 in the bio mandate that came because of it. What was done, how did these buildings downtown get heated prior to that that mandate?
Madam Chair, Representative, there it was coal at the time, and so the existing plant downtown was utilizing coal. It did have wood chips blended in with the coal for a small percentage, and it used natural gas to a certain percentage, but mostly coal. So when this combined heat and power plant went operational, it displaced over 50% of the coal that was used at the time, so it was a significant reduction. The combined heat and power plant was a new facility that was built at that time. Since then, we have shut down coal. Coal no longer is used at the facility that was eliminated March of last year. And so we utilize biomass, natural gas, and we have a solar array on the River Center, which is it's also the largest in North America, integrated into the hot water system.
Sure. Thank you. Chair Wagenius?
Yes, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. So this would be potentially a question to Mr. Smith. So just from a revenue stream standpoint, if this bill moves forward, from a current price standpoint, it's stated that this will reflect a 50% savings to ratepayers. What are you as an organization going to do as far as your budget? Obviously, if you're getting 50% less for the electricity that Xcel doesn't need, what are you guys going to do as an organization?
Madam Chair, yes. Representative, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So the facility, St. Paul Cogeneration, has a capital partner, and that's DTE. out of Detroit. And so the returns on that capital is going to them. It was a 20-year purchase agreement, and that capital is getting returned over that agreement. So in part, that's why you can have a cost reduction, because that PPA will be ended and that capital will have been recovered. In addition, the facility was originally designed, and what was in the original purchase agreement didn't have a lot of flexibility built into that purchase agreement. And so through recovery of the capital that will occur in the first 20 years and operating the plant differently, we can bring the costs down. And that is what is reflected in this agreement. There's still hard work to do. There's efficiency gains that can be made by operating the plant differently under the new structure of a new PPA. And there will be, there's going to be some risk in this as far as managing the capital. But as far as returns, it's much, much, much lower. District Energy St. Paul, while it has some benefit from the current agreement, leases, for example, because of the property that the facility is on, we have planned for that in our budgets, so that that will be going forward eliminated.
Madam Chair? Brunson.
Yes, go ahead, yeah. Representative.
Sorry, I just had my hand up. I don't know if you want me to go by the hand or I should just kind of...
Well, let's just converse. How's that?
Sounds great. Sounds great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Smith, so it sounds like the increased cost that was placed was going to Detroit to an investment firm. Is that kind of the private entity that we kind of hear about when we hear about kind of that partnership or whatever with District Energy?
So, Madam Chair and Representative, how the original investor was Trigen Synergy out of Cincinnati. And after a time that they were, that sold that to Duke Energy. And then Duke Energy, when they merged with a larger, much larger utility, they were required to divest themselves of some assets. And this was one of those assets, and DTE acquired that asset at this time. So they are the capital partner currently, and have been, I think, for about 7 years.
Representative Swazinski.
And we have a rough idea that it's going to save 50%, Mr. Smith. What is the current price that's being paid? I don't know if that's if that can be shared with the group, or what's the just so we can assure that this is for sure 50%. Savings to ratepayers.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is held information, but I would say this: Xcel has testified that the biomass projects that were underneath the biomass mandate, we were about $150, if I remember right. Rick testified to that a year or two ago, and so we're expecting roughly 50% of that.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And just, just another general question. So if, let's say we're looking at 3.5 years into the future, from a capital cost standpoint, obviously the it's been paid for essentially is what you're testifying to. That's why the power purchase agreement's able to, because the money outlays by the investment firms from out of state have been covered for the building of this building. So the electrification standpoint, so when if that potentially happens, obviously that's going to be different than hauling free wood by private and public entities across the metro. How are those costs potentially, how do you envision those costs potentially be burdened? Will those be burdened on ratepayers through Xcel? Would that be, because obviously we don't need this electricity that's generated. So how does that process work? Will you be coming to the legislature and asking for money? Kind of what's your vision there?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think I'm not sure I follow the question exactly. Eventually, this facility will need to shut down. Or maybe the markets change and that it's a much different market, but currently, with the way the electricity markets are, there's not a need, as you said, for this electricity. So eventually this facility will shut down, and there'll have to be a different, there have to be handled, the tree waste will have to be handled differently through other mechanisms. This facility won't be able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Straczynski.
And this question would probably be more directed to Mr. Eloff. So under current state law, it's actually illegal, if I understand that correctly, to compost or bury this tree material. Is that correct?
Mr. Eloff?
I believe it is.
Okay. Was that, Madam Chair, just as a kind of a follow-up to that, was that part of this agreement when this happened in 2003, or was that an existing law that exists? Obviously, that's a more historical question than anything. If you could look at, was that a law directed towards, to direct this wood waste to this plant, or was that an existing law prior to its existence?
Madam Chair, Representative Squadzinski, this is Bob Eloff. I don't know when that law was enacted and the relationship between that and the original PPA here. Mr. Smith might.
Mr. Smith, do you know the answer to that, or maybe it's something we need to get back to you with Representative Straczynski?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't, it was not included in the original biomass mandate. That's a statewide law. I don't think that was, there's any connection to that. I don't know the history of when that ban was put in place. I just know that it exists. It's not in the biomass mandate or any of that language. So I don't think there's any connection there, to the best of my knowledge.
Madam Chair, just a general question too. So if you could look that up, obviously I'm not a wood waste expert, but what would be the size of the site that would have to exist if this was to disappear, to actually bury this wood waste, from a year by year basis? That'd be an interesting calculation if we have any professionals out there that would like to provide that.
So, Madam Chair, if I might, the volume is significant. I will say that when Great River Energy shut down their RDF facility in Elk River, they were handling about the same tonnage on an annual basis. And that's having quite an impact on the landfill north of Elk River. I know that. It's an enormous amount of material that would have to be managed. So where that would have to go, how big of a site, it's significant. Then you would have to truck it. That's a big cost with biomass, is trucking it. So we try to keep it within a 50 to 60 mile radius of the facility because of the trucking costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then Mr. Smith, kind of how does that cost structure currently exist? You know, I know when you take a couch to the local dump or an old TV, there's a charge, essentially a dump charge, as an individual. So what do you charge individual businesses within the metro area or counties to bring wood waste to your facility? You know, obviously they have economic benefit. They don't have to haul it as far because there obviously wouldn't be a dump anywhere in the metro, but they get to get rid of the wood waste. What is that? How much of a revenue stream is that for your facility?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's not a revenue stream at all. We actually, much of the brush and logs that come in, they don't pay to drop it. It comes into the city. It's the City of St. Paul's wood yard that we operate for them. And so there's no charge there. It does come into other wood yards around the metro area. For example, St. Louis Park has a wood yard, and Ramsey County has a number of them. So they're located throughout the metro area, some of them on public land, some of them on private land. The material is brought to us as brush. We don't charge for them to dump it. We do then have to process that into usable fuel. If it is already processed when it comes to us into the form of wood chips and it meets our specification, there's a nominal payment because we don't have to then process the material as much. And generally, it covers their transportation costs.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. And just, it sounds like there is some savings in this bill, which I think everyone appreciates. Kind of maybe this would be a question for Mr. Evans, or when do you expect the ratepayers would start seeing some savings on their bottom line if this bill is to pass?
Madam Chair, Representative Studzinski, so the current power purchase agreement, which would be under the current price, goes through the end of 2022. And so we would be negotiating a new power purchase agreement that would take effect the first day of 2023. And at that point, we would be paying the lower price. As I mentioned before, this is one of these pass-through costs. So we pay dollar for dollar. There's no markup or markdown or any change. We simply take the dollars that we pay for this energy and we pass it through to our customers through the fuel clause on a dollar for dollar basis. So as soon as the fuel clause is readjusted, which you know happens very quickly, and we readjust that over the course of the year based on the cost of fuel and the cost of energy, people would start to see that savings at the beginning of 2023 or very shortly thereafter when the fuel clause is adjusted.
Okay.
Are you, other questions, Representative Studzinski, or?
I'll take a pause right now so other folks can, if they have something that's stirring in them.
All right, Representative Akam is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to our presenters today. I really appreciate this work toward making carbon-free electrification of the district energy, and also an opportunity to manage some of the tree waste in our communities. And that's really what my question is about. And so I know that you talked about the comparison to Dutch elm disease and, you know, communities, cities. I used to be on the city council in Minnetonka, and we talked a lot about emerald ash borer and the similarities and differences with Dutch elm disease and how we as a community were going to address it. And so my question is about the estimates that Mr. Smith, you made about truckloads or semi-loads of trees that stretch to Alexandria and New Orleans. And are those based on the number of actual ash trees, or are those based on what you think communities will bring to you? I know that here in Minnetonka, where we have a lot of parks and areas where trees are maybe with not a hazard to safety, and so they aren't on the boulevard and they aren't, you know, compromising streets and safety of resources, they're going to be left to die because we're not necessarily, we know we're going to lose all of the ash trees, and so we're not necessarily trying to slow the spread. And so I'm wondering if the estimates that you're talking about and projections that you see of wood coming to you are based on all the trees, or if they're based on those trees you think communities are going to actually cut and then bring to you for your use. And then also, what would happen if your estimates are low? Is that going to in any way impact this power purchase agreement and how it unfolds with Xcel?
Madam Chair, Representative, so the first estimate, the 260,000 tons annually, that's what we're dealing with right now. We've been operational for 17 years, and we've been dealing with in that 230, 250, 270,000 tons every year. So that was before EAB started hitting. There was still the enormous amount of tree waste being generated in the area. So that partly is just history. What we're seeing now is an increase in the amount of tree waste being generated as a result of EAB. And so a greater percentage of the material we're dealing with is TAE. Concerning the other estimate, the 1.7 million tons, that's based upon DNR and Department of Ag work that they've done as to how much will be generated in the seven. That's just the seven county metro area. That's not beyond that. That's how much they have estimated will be generated in the area that will need to be managed. That's so not then, our estimate.
Right. Okay. And then you wouldn't know if that's based on, and since we don't have any from anyone from the DNR here to ask, but you wouldn't know if that estimate is based on the actual number of trees in the seven county metro area, or if it's based on what communities plan to harvest.
They've done, Madam Chair, Representative, they've done a some work to go into the, I have seen the like the spreadsheets and the things that were used to estimate this. And they had done some work by going into communities and estimating the trees, taking an analysis of the sizes of trees that were in communities, and they did that across the state, actually. And then from that, estimates were made as to how much will die off, how much will have to be disposed and managed, because not all trees are on managed land. So that is on managed lands that they're estimating will need to be dealt with.
Okay. And then, so if that estimate happens to be low, does that have any impact on this power purchase agreement or the plans to elect? I mean, does that impact this at all?
Madam Chair, Representative, it does not. Again, we've been dealing with tree waste in this region for 17 years now. And so tree waste will continue after EAB is gone. We'll just have fewer trees. But we're going to continue to have tree waste in this region that needs to be managed. And so, no, that's not going to be. It does not really impact this. It's certainly not in the time frame that we're talking about.
Thank you. We finished, Representative Akam. All right. Next is Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to start by commending Xcel and District Energy on working on this agreement. I know that these discussions aren't always easy, and but it's clear that this has been a real, I think, win-win for the future of the district energy system and for Xcel Energy customers, and I think is a really creative way to go about this. I just had two questions. The first is the 2027 timeline for the phase out. Mr. Smith, could you talk a little bit about how that lines up, if you know, with any of the projections for when EAB may have started to run its course, or if that you mentioned that there still will for sure be baseline tree waste that needs to be taken care of, but do we have some sense that the EAB issue will have been mostly resolved by then?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Long, it will not have run its course by 2027. Right now, it's estimated that we are in about the 11th year, 10, 11th year in the metro area, and it takes about 20 years for EAB to run its course. It's not spread throughout the entire metro area, so this is going to continue beyond 2027, the date that's in this agreement. The 2027 timeline is more about allowing time for other alternatives to be put in place. And as we've talked with members of the administration, of different agencies, and with the counties who are responsible for dealing with waste, they're saying they need time and actually to come up with solutions if we're no longer going to be that solution going forward. So that's where this 2027 date, getting 7 to 10 years out, came from.
Representative Long, do you have another question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that's helpful. So it sounds like 2027 would be year 18 of 20. So hopefully most of the EAB issue would be behind the metro and this region, and there could be time to develop new solutions. The second question I have is, you mentioned that this would be the only project of its kind in North America, which is pretty remarkable that we would be moving towards an electrified district energy system at the scale that we're thinking about. Would we be unique in the world? Are there other examples around the world? And what do you think having a project like this in our own backyard would do for helping advance clean alternatives for district energy and across the country.
Madam Chair, Representative Long, it would be unique in the world. I don't know of another one that's 100%. The largest I have seen personally is in Berlin. That system is about three times the size of District Energy St. Paul, and they've electrified about a third of their load. So it would be comparable to District Energy St. Paul. And that electrification went operational last year. But in North America, there's nothing like what we're talking about. There is a pretty large-scale electric boiler installed in Georgia, but it covers a percentage of that system. The system is nowhere near the size of District Energy St. Paul. District Energy St. Paul is the largest hot water system in North America. So if we think about the history of this facility, we have regularly attracted visitors from around the world for many years because of the innovation that we've experienced. And we expect through this project, there will be a lot of people interested in what we're doing and integration of clean energy from Xcel and the electrification that is moving towards the future. So we think there's going to be a lot of interest in this and something that is good for not only St. Paul, but good for Minnesota, and something that we'd be very excited to work on with Xcel and demonstrate by what we can accomplish working together. We already know of other utilities that are very interested in what we're talking about.
Representative Long, no follow-up. Representative Mecklen is next.
I think I'm there. I'm having a little bit of tech difficulty, so bear with me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions for Mr. Evans, if possible.
Yes, he's here.
Mr. Evans, you know, under this current agreement that we're looking at, what would the Xcel customer, when would the Xcel customer begin to see a savings, like for a month, year? Do you have an idea of that?
Well,
Mr. Evans.
Madam Chair, Representative, the new power purchase agreement, if it's negotiated and signed, would take effect on the first day of 2023. And so again, this is a pass-through cost, so that to the extent that we're able to lower the price of the energy, that pass-through would go through to our customers at that point.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mecklen.
Again, Mr. Evans, so how much would be the typical residential savings for these customers per month under the new deal?
Madam Chair and Representative, it will be very, very small. District Energy makes up a very small part of our total energy portfolio. So it would be difficult. It would be a matter of cents on a monthly bill. When we deal with all of the things that go into our rates and the costs that our customers bear, you know, unfortunately or unfortunately, no one of them, you know, is ever by itself a huge impact on customers' bills. Though I will say that the ability to buy our way out of the other two biomass contracts, which were also very expensive and had a much longer life on them than this one, we did that a couple of years ago. That did actually, you know, make a pretty significant impact. But, you know, this is a small part of our system, and it would be about a 50% savings. So it would be very small savings on an average customer's bill.
Representative Mecklen.
I'm good. Oh, thank you.
Okay. No further questions from Representative Mecklen. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I grew up on Elm Street, and it was a canopy of elms in all directions. And so I lived through the loss of all those, and I'm seeing it now in Apple Valley, where we're losing the ash trees, and it's the same exact thing. So most of my questions had to do with those issues, but Representative Akam covered those pretty thoroughly. I did want to still ask Mr. Smith, please, when you look at the amount of wood waste that you're utilizing, is there a percentage of what is the ash trees that are making up that you can quantify? I understood from your answers that whether the ash was there or not, there's still plenty of wood waste coming in to make this a viable operation for years to come. But is that a knowable number as far as how much you're using presently?
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, we don't know exactly what percentage EAB is. A lot of this material comes to us, it's all tangled together. We do have estimates out of some cities and some communities that are better than others. So I'll use the city of St. Paul as an example because we work very closely with them and we have a good number from them. We know last year that the amount of material we came in from the city of St. Paul exceeded 50% EAB, and this year it's higher than that. The amount of tree waste that we've gotten out of the city of St. Paul, the amount of EAB material that we have gotten in brush and logs this year through May was as much as we handled last year. We are seeing acceleration of the amount of tree waste that we're getting that is EAB related, but we don't know what percentage it's making up of the entire amount. We know at times our brush and log pile that we have, at times it's 100% or 90% of the material there is EAB related, but other times it's a smaller percentage. We don't know for sure.
Thank you,
Representative Chairman. Do you have another question?
Yes, please. So the other thing, I believe you had mentioned that you're dealing with 22 counties. So I was just curious, what happens to emerald ash trees in other parts of the state? Are there other biomass facilities utilizing any of the emerald ash? I'm unfamiliar and wondered if you knew.
Mr. Smith?
So, Madam Chair and Representative Bierman, there are some other biomass facilities in the state. I don't know to what extent they're dealing with EAB. We're pretty unique in that we're dealing with tree waste from communities where other biomass facilities typically are utilizing either from forest residuals or something like that. In this case, we're dealing with tree waste mostly from urban areas that is coming to us. And so that makes us a bit of a unique facility. I know other counties are having to open burn. I've heard that they've filled up what they can do with mulch and those kinds of markets, and so they've had to resort to open burning the material.
One more question I had on. When you mentioned the fact that you take the wood from the St. Paul yard and you don't charge anything for it, I'm thinking that St. Paul, the city, must charge for disposal at that facility, and then they just hand it over to you. So there is a transaction there, I would presume. Am I correct?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, we actually operate that facility for the city, and so the city does not have any staff at that site, so there is no charge at that particular site. There are other sites around the metro area that there may be charges for bringing that material. That's not something that we manage. What they'll do is they'll ask us to come in and take care of the tree waste from there. There's no charge from the city of St. Paul to those folks to drop that material off.
Madam Chair, one more question on a little different area. The electrification of the facility, is that underway now? Or if not, could you comment on the first initial steps that would be taken in that process?
Madam Chair, Representative, it is not underway now. What we have been doing is working on scoping of what this would look like and putting together our teams to start the study work between us and Excel. And so we are preparing to get together and work on the analysis of this, but it's not underway yet.
Madam Chair. Purpose. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Evans, for being here today, and appreciate all the good information.
Thank you. We now have Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I think I have a couple of different questions. I'm kind of skeptical about just the whole biomass conversation, so I appreciate having this thing right now. When we shut down our plant in Benson, a lot of folks around here were hurt badly by there was the truck haulers, and there was the ash residual from those plants were put out of business. A lot of farmers that own that thing. And what Mr. Smith has had a chance to say is that likely the cost of this is, and it's understand is there's still under negotiations, it sounds like, is that roughly the price might be cut in half, give or take. I guess the deal's not done yet. But is there going to be, and maybe this is a question to Mr. Evans, because negotiations are still ongoing, will there be a lump sum payment or any kind of extension clause that is kind of a one-time payment from a fund or something that is maybe not reflected into the actual purchase of a megawatt going forward? I want to make sure that to just take a price and cut it in half because their capital expenditures or depreciation maybe have been exhausted. I'm just wondering, is there more to it than that?
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, there is no lump sum payment. The payments that were made in the example you cited, which was at the Benson plant and the Laurentian plant, we essentially were buying our way out of the final years of those contracts. And what we found was that we could buy those vendors, if you will, out of those contracts and still save our customers money because the price of the energy was so high. At the time, we did discuss this with District Energy, but they had a much shorter period left on their PPA than those other firms did. And so it didn't make the same kind of financial sense. Plus, it made it more difficult for them for a bunch of reasons to, you know, they just were not in a position to be bought out of their contract the way the other vendors were. So in this case, what's happening is that the power purchase agreement, we're not buying it out. It's just expiring. It's coming to the end. And we are negotiating a new power purchase agreement with them under the terms in this legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, maybe to Mr. Evans. So am I safe to assume that if we did not extend this contract, the ratepayers would have saved more money? But by extending the agreement here by 4 or 5 years or whatever that life might be, the savings will not be realized by the XL ratepayers.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, if there was no new power purchase agreement, we would not buy the energy from District Energy. We would get the energy elsewhere. So they would be replaced. So the thing about, I mean, what this bill accomplishes, though, is to try to ease this transition between District Energy, because they have an enormous amount of infrastructure and they have a lot of heat and air conditioning customers that depend on them. And so it becomes, frankly, a matter of, you know, is the state of Minnesota really going to just cut them off at the end of 22 and say, you know, you're on your own? And so we are, you know, we worked out this arrangement with them and, you know, supporting this legislation in order to ease that transition. But, you know, we expect the price, the RDF price, to be somewhere that we will negotiate with them on the new PPA to be somewhere between $60 and $80 a megawatt hour as compared to the estimate of 150 megawatt hours that Mr. Smith was talking about earlier. So we see that as a significant savings for our customers going forward, but also allowing us to work on this transition.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. maybe going back to Mr. Smith's comment too, is that the cities and the taxpayers, it sounds like they just bring their wood products to you and dump it, and there's no charge, there's no revenue to you. Am I thinking clearly that, you know, I've got the city of Spicer in my district that pays for XL Energy power. Is it safe to assume that all the XL customers in the state that is a customer will be subsidizing in a way the removal of all the trees in the 22 counties or the area that all the trees are being disposed of without charging anything to the cities for dropping off, the bad wood? I guess I'm just wondering, is it fair to say that that's maybe the right way to go forward, is that we should be charging something in the areas of where the property and the trees are coming from, so that there is a little bit more of a reduction to the XL purchase agreement? Is that something that has been looked at? Because it seems like the cities that are getting rid of their emerald oil, the ashes, they just, it seems like it's awfully a good deal, and the XL Energy customers are sort of picking up the tab. Am I thinking that correctly, Mr. Smith?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker. So you are correct that they're not necessarily paying to have that material disposed of and made into energy. And that cost is passed on both to XL and to District Energy St. Paul, which buys thermal energy from that system as well. What has been found over the years is when tipping fees were charged, the wood waste would just get dumped, and it would get dumped in different areas and not get managed. And so this was actually the way to deal with the tree waste problems, because we were hearing about that from counties and others. There has been some discussion about should there be tipping fees. Is there a way to manage that? That's difficult for us as a private entity to manage across counties and so forth, because it just gets dumped on in a variety of locations. So that is a discussion, but as you describe the system today, they're not currently paying for it. That cost gets passed through. It gets passed through on to District Energy. It gets passed through on to XL.
And final question, Madam Chair. Yeah, final question. Thank you. If this agreement was extended, maybe it would be extended again. What is the maximum life of this? Maybe the current plant, or is there something where you would have to go through a deeper relicensing at this point if you were to extend it past the proposed 2027 year?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, while this facility has a 20-year agreement, I mean, it's an industrial facility. There's no reason why these facilities can't last 30, 35 years or more. So it's not necessarily a lifespan. It's more about economics and what the current situation is in the electricity world. And so there's not as much of a need for this power. It's more expensive compared to other renewables, wind and now solar. And so that's just the economics of the time. But at the same time, we also, it's not just the electricity. We're actually dealing with a waste stream, and that waste stream needs to be managed. And so this is the system in place that's managing that. And until there is a different system in place to manage that, this is what we have. It's not a perfect system by any means, but it's a system that is working, and there needs to be a glide path to the next thing.
Representative Baker, do you have an additional question?
I do not, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Representative Swazinski, I see your name on the list. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If there's other folks on the list, I can go later. I just raised my hand. So
no, you are the last one on the list right
all
now.
All right. Sounds good. So just maybe for the group, you could explain the cooling side too. I think we all understand for the folks that are listening in the public as a service, Mr. Smith. But the heating side, how does the cooling side work when you're delivering cooled water? Do you have Freon sites, or and how does that process work for the buildings and for how you produce it and distribute it?
Madam Chair, Representative, it is a refrigeration-based cooling. We used to have some cooling that was generated by steam from cogen. The economics of that were not as good just because of now you have new chillers that are quite efficient. And so all of our chillers are refrigeration-based, and they're generated with electricity that we purchase from Xcel. We have tens of thousands of tons of cooling that we provide. It's a pretty large system. We also utilize thermal storage. We have two large thermal storage tanks that we do a lot of our cooling off-peak at night. So we have roughly 7 million gallons of chill water that we're generating every night off-peak, and then we're using that during the day. So it's a pretty sizable system. We have about 110 buildings, roughly, closing on 120 buildings, in excess of 20 million square feet that we're cooling, including the state capitol complex.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, you know, that kind of just brings to thought. So it's really not the wood burning, although you're using electricity that you're generating to cool the buildings in the summertime. But, I mean, I'm guessing that the site is also hooked up to the grid so that if you're down, that those pumps and things would still continue to work whether you're currently generating electricity. Is that how the process works?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, the cogeneration facility, because of contract and how it was put in place, is not cogenerating electricity for cooling. So if it's not generating to the grid, it's not generating, we're hooked up separately from that facility. So it doesn't serve the cooling system. All of our electricity for cooling is purchased from Xcel.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then this question would kind of go to Mr. Evans from Xcel. You know, looking at the idea, I know you proposed earlier this year a question along the lines of shouldering. And so that would be in the spring and the fall when you have as little load as possible on the grid, that you were looking to essentially idle your coal plants in the spring and fall. It seems to me like the only reason why this would exist, you don't need the electricity that district energy produces, and you don't need the electricity that it produces to cool, that you would simply idle this plant in the summer, other than just to burn wood. Am I correct?
When you say idle this plant, I assume you mean the district energy plant. So, you know, when we sign power purchase agreements, which is what we have with district energy, the same thing we do with wind farms and with solar farms and with independently owned gas plants, for example, those sorts of things. When we sign those, there's not only a price set, but there's also an amount of energy set, because the investors who built those generation have to count on a certain amount of cash flow over the course of the year. So there may be some flexibility, Mr. Smith would know better than I, in their power purchase agreement. But I doubt whether there is enough flexibility there to take into account shouldering. Shouldering occurs with plants that we own, so we're not having to pay for energy for those plants to some other third party who expects and needs to be paid. So when we, as we see, particularly with more intermittent wind and solar energy on our system, that we are able to shut the coal plants down and still maintain reliability. That's something that we can do with plants that we own, which I would argue is one of the reasons why the state should encourage utilities to own generation. It's a lot more flexibility in terms of how they operate. But in the case of district energy, as well as all the other PPAs we have, the private parties that own that generation have to be able to count on a certain amount of income, which is why that's negotiated into the power purchase agreement.
Madam Chair, maybe that would be just a general question to Mr. Smith. And, you know, it seems like this agreement potentially is early. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, fluctuating out there. Obviously, you want to have market certainty, but it seems like, you know, from a process standpoint, you want to electrify a plant that you don't necessarily need. It's not needed for cooling in the summer. You're already looking to do shouldering. You know, why not? And then also, we don't know the full extent or there isn't a set long-term date where these things could be renegotiated. You know, my question is, you know, why not, you know, have some of these things integrated into the power purchase agreement? Obviously, there's some revenue sources that aren't being tapped, whether it be tipping fees or the rest from district energy. And, you know, I just looked up biomass costs. I mean, from 8 to 15 cents or per kilowatt, I mean, there's a pretty wide range. And obviously, those things are still in negotiation. But, you know, I think if we could include more of those things and those more of those possibilities to find peak efficiencies for ratepayers, not only for the surrounding areas, but for the city of St. Paul. So, just some ideas.
Okay. I don't think I heard a question there, Representative Swazinski. Am I right?
Yes, you are correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Do you have another question, or shall I see some new names on the list, and Representative Nelson is next if you don't have another question?
I'm good, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Representative Nelson and then Representative Hornstein. Representative Nelson?
Hello? Am I there?
Yes.
Okay. I just had a connectivity issue here, so I had to switch from Wi-Fi over to the cell signal, sorry. I had a couple of questions. I've heard the term or several times, I don't know if it's carbon free or reduced carbon or whatever, about these, you know, the biomass plant. And I don't know if it's who the question would be for, but I'm just kind of wondering, what is the level of carbon generation or carbon reduction? I mean, a tree is basically stored carbon. You know, it takes in carbon dioxide that we exhale and releases oxygen as it's growing through photosynthesis and everything. And what, you know, I've heard carbon free several times, or is there anybody that can kind of give a rundown of how much does this reduce our carbon levels, you know, burning biomass and everything? If I can kind of get an understanding of that, please.
Would that be for Mr. Smith, I think? Let's try that. Mr. Smith?
All right, Madam Chair, I'll take a shot at this. So biomass is considered to be carbon neutral by the MPCA. Obviously, there's some carbon that is released when you are hauling it, but it's a very, very small amount compared to the carbon that's in the wood. They consider it carbon neutral really because it's released over a short period of time, considering, you know, if you're thinking many decades, the tree is grown over a period of time and then it's released. So it's over a short period of time, and that's why it's considered carbon neutral. There's been a lot of conversation about that. But that is the current stance, both at the EPA and the MPCA.
Representative Nelson, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you for that explanation. And so the, you know, with that being carbon neutral, and then is the, you know, and so your transportation would be a fairly small amount of carbon that is expended there. Maybe a follow-up on that. Do you have ash, or what is the waste from that? And, you know, is that able to be utilized, or what amount of waste is there? I mean, I heat my house primarily with wood, so I know that when I clean out my furnace, I have ash. And so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know it's quite a bit different system that, you know, the plant has than my furnace, but at the same time, there's somewhat similar principle.
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is ash. There's two different types of ash. There's what's called bottom ash, and that's what falls through the grates and is quenched. And then there's fly ash, and that's captured through electrostatic filtration system. On an annual base or on average basis, about 3% of the pass-through comes out as ash. Both ash, both the bottom ash and the fly ash are used for soil amendment. So we work through a program through Department of Agriculture. They have farmers that need this ash for soil amendment, and that's where all of it goes, is to farmers.
Representative Nelson, did you have a follow-up?
No, I don't. Thank you. And yeah, we've used fly ash on our farm here, and I was just kind of wanting to.
It's very good.
You know about that, but you know, just thank you for the answers. And
okay, Representative Hornstein, and I see you're the last one on the list. So, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this hearing. And along the lines of Representative Nelson's question, we haven't talked much about some of the emissions impacts of burning biomass. And my question is really, in this transition that we're talking about this morning, has there been, will there be any changes in the permit? You know, I know that there are particulates that are emitted, NOx, CO, you know, there are air emissions, and, you know, particularly the fine particulates are of concern. So I guess maybe a rundown of some of the air emissions that are part of this process, and will that be, can we expect any changes as a result of this transition?
Madam Chair, Representative, there are emissions, as you noted, from the burning of wood. We do have modern back-end controls on this facility. But as we look to ramp down the amount of tree waste we utilize in the future, those emissions will come down. We're not contemplating at this point an amendment to our permit, but if the facility is no longer used or is used different, we will have a time when our permit comes up for renewal. It was just amended here recently when we got rid of coal, and that reduced our emissions quite a bit from that. So there's not anything planned at this point. We still have to study this to see what it looks like, but yes, emissions will go down as you're using less wood, eventually eliminate use of wood and cogen. I want to comment also, if I could, on the shoulder seasons. Right now, the way our permit, or our, not a permit, where our agreement works with Xcel is basically we are in right now peak time. So we're generating our electricity, peak electricity right now in the summer months. And that's what the system needed at the time when this agreement was in place. But we don't have a lot of the heat needs right now. So we actually will use cooling towers to get rid of a lot of that heat. One of the things that we've contemplated, which gets to your emissions comment too, Representative Hornstein, is that we can actually pull down how much we generate. It's called turn down. We can generate less electricity and utilize the heat. And so the system is much more efficient. And so you get emission reduction. The plant operates more efficiently. When you have more efficiency, you have reduced cost. And we actually then would look at how do we operate this facility when we need the heat, not when we don't need the heat. And so the overall system becomes much more effective and efficient, which is one of the cost reductions that we have outlined in this plan. That's not what we have today. But in a new agreement, we would want to have that flexibility. It's something we've talked about with Xcel for some time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is Vice Chair Long. I think our chair might have succumbed to the vagaries of rural internet. But I think that was our last question that we had on the list. And we have not heard from anyone in the public who wishes to testify at this time. Is there anything else from members before we adjourn? Seeing no hands raised or folks jumping up and down, thank you very much to our witnesses for today, and thanks for joining. This remote meeting is adjourned.